Welcome back. It's a Tuesday, the 9th day of April, 2024. I'm your host, Mark Hall. The day after the big total solar eclipse, and unfortunately a lot of people didn't get to see it because of cloud cover. We had high clouds here in southern Colorado, but it was only partial here anyway, around three quarters. The clouds mostly just dimmed it, so we could see what we needed to see anyway fairly well, with welding goggles. More fortunately and thankfully, however, any number of things that were predicted by various alarmists, extremists, and propagandists, i.e. the waystream media, and yes, even people that can read scripture, have not happened, at least not yet happened. And when it comes to signs in the heavens, folks, I would suggest that that's the way it's exactly supposed to be. Signs in the heavens are a warning of things to come, not necessarily at that instant. And as you hopefully recall, Solomon in the book of Ecclesiastes pointed out that because the penalty against an evil work is not executed speedily, in other words, there's lag, doesn't happen immediately, the people who have been too dumbed down to see the connection between cause and effect are inclined to do evil. But at least we haven't seen reports yet of massive acts of terrorism or cyber attacks or taking down of critical infrastructure like water systems or the power grid. So that's good. And of course, with literally battalions of military invaders already in place in the United States, let's go Brandon, not to mention treason still being unpunished in the highest places in the land, nothing has changed on that score anyway. I did see a few things on the web, though, that were at least worthy of note. A piece from a prepper website said, I got a lot of emails from people predicting all kinds of crazy things going to happen yesterday, including the sun would be permanently blocked, we'd never see sunlight again, massive earthquakes would kick off simultaneously, killing millions, cell phone and internet service would go down forever. That, of course, is still a daily possibility, folks. And so the author, these are some of the tamer things I saw in email, but you know what I thought every time I read one of them? I sure as heck hope that nothing that truly crazy happens, but if it does, that is why we prepare. I've been preparing for years, said this author. Most of you probably have too, so that is why we should have peace of mind. And that, I think, was good advice, albeit incomplete. He left out the most important reason why we should have peace of mind, and that is that we know who we serve. And that's the other thing that really struck me yesterday. I watched some of the live coverage as the shadow swept over places like Indianapolis, Indiana, where people did get a good view. And NASA's feed had some commentators, both women, saying, hey, this is amazing stuff. I've never seen a total solar eclipse before. Wow, it's overwhelming. It's awesome and so forth. That was good. And they basically said, yes, until you've seen it in person, and I would echo this sentiment, you can't imagine the grandeur, the scope, the overwhelming emotional impact that it has. And I'll admit, folks, having seen two in my lifetime and being thankful and recognizing that I will never forget the experience as long as I live, they left out one big element, and that is you cannot witness this in person, and I think they were probably told, don't even think about saying it, that if there is anything that demonstrates the majesty of our Creator, look up in the sky and see it. So, folks, the really good news is that a whole lot of people were blessed by precisely that, and I think a large, probably majority of them, recognized it for exactly what it was. And, oh yeah, that includes a sign in the heavens. There were a few, thankfully isolated, instances of the usual nutcases. We may see more reports like this later, but at least for the time being, the waste stream isn't emphasizing them, which means if there were any, you can guess why we're not going to hear about them. But we did see this from the Daily Mail. A delusional Georgia woman, it said, opened fire on a Florida highway, not even anywhere close to the zone of totality, claiming that, oh yeah, you knew this was going to be the result, don't you? God spoke to her through the eclipse and told her to start shooting people. And hint, that means it's not the God that wrote the Bible. And guess what they found in her car? The dreaded Booga Booga Black Assault Rifle AR-15, enemy of the Biden Fuhrer and all of those who hate the Second Amendment. Nobody was injured seriously, but she did shoot two cars. And she got her promised 15 minutes of fame. From there, let's talk about some other nutcases on parade and things that mark the signs of the times, as well as amazing coincidences like this one. Chicagoans, it says, have been amused to see ousted mayor, disgusting scumbag and blithering idiot Lori Light and the Loafers, Lightfoot, hired to investigate what some call America's worst mayor, now that she's left the spotlight anyway, for corruption. And ponder the irony there. Lightfoot was hired by the Village Board of Dalton, Illinois, to investigate their own mayor, Tiffany Henyard, who's accused of, what else, embezzling public funds. And who better to investigate her? She's also been accused of retaliating against the victim of sexual assault and vetoing an investigation into those allegations. And the disgraced mayor of Chicago from 2019 until being ousted last year will be paid $400 an hour for doing some other God knows what for as long as they can drag the probe out. So you got one DEI case investigating another, and even the leftist media is having to roll their eyes at this one. As you might suspect, folks, lots of people online are mocking this ridiculous decision, saying it's America's former worst mayor investigating the country's current worst mayor. And as others noted, it takes one to know one. And this is my favorite line, I guess Fannie Willis was busy. And the Daily Mail's authors just had to include this line, Henyer's mayoral powers may now extend to potentially vetoing the probe. And if she does that, she's even more stupid than people may have thought. Because talk about biting the hand that's trying to cover for you. And yeah, here's another suspicious coincidence. Seems like we're getting these almost on command lately. No surprise there if you're paying attention. Yet another container ship. This time it's the APL King Dao, and guess who owns that? Lost power, but fortunately slowed to a halt near the New York City Verrazano Bridge just 12 days after another cargo vessel mysteriously had a cyber attack and crashed into that bridge in Baltimore, destroying the port, the bridge, and much of the Northeast economy.
These aren't the droids you're looking for.
These aren't the droids we're looking for. Move along. Move along.
This time, though, and I guess thankfully, there were three tugs on hand, which prevented a worse disaster. The APL King Dao says the coverage, registered in Malta, conked out as it crossed the Kiel Van Kull Waterway, a narrow shipping lane between Staten Island and Bayonne, New Jersey, one of the area's busiest waterways. No harm done, but I guess you could say a message has been sent. And here's what it is, folks, just in case you get your news from CNN. Oh, yeah, these things happen all the time. I've already said it, but it bears repeating. Nothing to see here. Move along, and pay no attention to that man or a disaster behind the curtain. And here's a story also from the Daily Mail that may help us to understand why. Exclusive, it says in the headline, one quarter of all Americans say that the Baltimore Bridge collapse is not at all what you're supposed to believe it was. And they didn't quite put it that way, but instead, are you sitting down? They blame a conspiracy for the tragedy, says a first-of-its-kind poll. Notice how they slipped the word tragedy in there like you're not supposed to notice? That's part of the plan here. And this is why more propaganda is necessary, because just over half of those polled believe the official version of the cargo ship mysteriously, unexpectedly, and nothing to see here, having lost propulsion. But funny, isn't it? That's where they put a period. They left the following out. And steering and all those other things, like redundant backup systems that you're not supposed to pay any attention to. The poll was conducted by the Daily Mail along with TIPP, surveying 1,432 people, showing a surprisingly large number of Americans say that there was a plot that led that huge cargo ship to crash into and collapse the Francis Scott Key Bridge in Baltimore on March 26th. So, Big Brother and his Ministry of Truth has a lot more work to do, but still, more than half of voters, 55%, believe that the tragedy that claimed those six lives was, yep, an accident. They don't tell you this next part, but your host and other inquiring minds would like to know just how many of that 55% also took their Zyklon B injections and boosters and also believed that the 2020 election was fair and honest. The senile diaper wearer did get 81 million votes, and no dead people voted no, not anywhere, especially not in those swing states. And this bit of transparent propaganda tripe would be funny if it wasn't so disgusting. Quote, Andrew Tate, they opine, an online provocateur with more than 9 million X or Twitter followers, posted without evidence that the ship was cyber-attacked and deliberately steered into the bridge. And isn't this amazing, folks? The propagandists had to use that same phrase, without evidence, no less than three times in the piece. Oh, yeah, along with them referring to General Michael Flynn, Donald Trump's infamous conspiracy theorist, having called it a black swan event, which, if you think about it, and they don't want you to, is exactly the kind of thing that they would dismiss because it's statistically based evidence that what we're trying to get you to believe here is absolute BS, not just once in a blue moon. So isn't it coincidental that they intend to show you in the very same publication that, yeah, this stuff happens all the time? And if you don't believe that, just wait. We've got another one on tap. Now, the beauty of that plan is only one of them actually has to hit the bridge in order to get people to drink the Kool-Aid. Here's another item, also courtesy of the Daily Mail. I thought it was interesting, but I saw it when I was looking up the other pieces I've already done. Donald Trump allies, it says, in an exclusive piece, have released a new documentary, so look for it real soon, but not at a theater near you, accusing prosecutors, I hope you're sitting down for this one too, folks, of corruption. Who could have imagined such a thing as the Stormy Daniels so-called hush money trial, which isn't really a crime if you knew that, begins in New York with a rigged jury and a whole bunch of criminal prosecutors and a judge that we already know is, well, pretty much par for the course in the criminally evil state that has a rule of law that doesn't bear any resemblance to anything you might find in a constitutional republic. Trump allies, it begins, will step up their attacks on prosecutors investigating, sick, the actually elected president next week, and no, they didn't put it that way either, with the launch of an online documentary accusing them, and I would say with all kinds of evidence, of political activism and electioneering. How about election rigging and criminal fraud amounting to treason? Chasing Trump, it's called. It's due to be released April 17th, 2 days after what passes for a court in New York will have begun jury rigging or selection in the first of Trump's 4 bogus criminal prosecutions. The producers of the film say it will delve into the backgrounds of the so-called prosecutors overseeing each of these fraudulent cases. And what with the former president having been deprived of the concept of free speech, a New York gag order, in other words, preventing him from, commenting on the case and attacking the criminals attacking him, including jurors, sick, court staff, witnesses, sick, and prosecutors, as well as their relatives, it's just another example, they claim, of how he, the actually elected president, is relying on the MAGA world to dish dirt on his accusers. Oh, good grief. At least they do actually quote Donald Trump Jr., who told DailyMail.com that Chasing Trump is an important documentary that exposes the left-wing prosecutors weaponizing the government to target my father, unquote. People like the criminally evil and discredited, but you wouldn't know it to read pieces like this, Fannie Willis, who's leading the fraudulent Georgia election prosecution, is one of the big 4 who figures prominently in the documentary. I do like this. Intones the narrator of the film, says the Daily Mail, quote, 4 corrupt, politically motivated prosecutors, 1 target, Donald Trump. They say they're upholding the law, but a close examination reveals politics of the very worst kind meant to influence the 2024 election, unquote, and I have to say it, duh. But let's give credit where it's due. Chasing Trump is the first in a series to be produced by the conservative website, notes the Daily Mail, called American Greatness. And it'll be available for free as of the 17th at their website, amgreatness.com, amgreatness.com, if you want to make sure you get it right, as well as across other streaming platforms until, of course, it's banned, like X, YouTube, and Rumble. And says the managing editor of American Greatness, Kurt Mercadenta, it will shock anyone who actually believes the legal system was free of partisan political considerations. But still, folks, I think it sounds like it'd be worth paying attention to. From there, we go to a story that I think is very interesting, and that also includes the fact that its source is a bit surprising. A veteran NPR editor says a piece from the Daily Mail and others has blown the whistle on how that publicly funded broadcaster has become what we all know, an activist organization clearly obsessed with pushing progressive ideals. Uri Berliner, business editor at NPR for 25 years, has offered a glimpse into his belief, and I think he's right, folks, that NPR has gone from a respected information source, okay, well, maybe that's pushing it a bit, but at least they were far more respected, to one that simply can't be trusted to honestly cover the news. Now, here I have to add, no, they're hardly alone. Pick 3 letters. If it's not a TLA for tyranny, it's likely to be some form or other of waste stream media, Ministry of Truth, fake news. Berliner uncovers how NPR knowingly kept information from its audience during the 2016 and then again 2020 presidential elections and says that NPR's editors were quick to jump on claims that Donald Trump was a, you know it, Russian asset, but far more reticent to cover the obvious subsequent debunking of the BS that they pushed for so long. And in an essay to that effect for the Free Press, Berliner notes that while NPR's always had a known liberal bent, the publication was at least, quote, not knee-jerk, activist, or scolding, something he says that changed when Donald Trump entered the political arena. And he says it was just one of a number of stories that they refused to cover or lied about. Similarly, when it came to the COVID lab leak theory, which NPR continues to try to discredit, as well as the Hunter Biden laptop from hell, which his bosses declined to cover, Berliner notes that, nope, there were all kinds of things that were part of a pattern. Today, he said, those who listen to NPR or Rediscoveries online find something different, the distilled worldview of a very small segment of the U.S. population. And he puts much of the blame for that shift to the ultra-left on former CEO John Lansing. And the Daily Mail kindly shows us a picture of him with the Bidenfuhrer, dated 2023. Berliner tracks the last days of the old NPR to 2011, when he said it still had a leftist tilt, but at least still bore a resemblance to America at large, and an audience that described themselves as 26% conservative, 23% moderate, and 37% liberal. And nowadays, the only conservatives that watch are arguably just looking for laughs. By 2023, he notes, only 11% of listeners self-described as very or somewhat conservative, and 67% or more swore they were very or at least somewhat liberal. Note, folks, that the somewhat liberal no doubt regard Karl Marx as one of their favorite authors. Which would be a problem, given that NPR claims to be all things considered, and as a result, what we see here, he notes, is devastating both for its so-called journalism as well as its business model, says the veteran editor in his essay. And Berliner explains how Trump's 2016 candidacy literally changed how NPR covered politics, writing, quote, what began as tough, straightforward coverage of a belligerent, truth-impaired president, and there you go, folks, veered towards efforts to damage or topple Trump's presidency. And NPR, he writes, became obsessed with rumors about Trump colluding with Russia, Russia, Russia to defeat Hitler. And they went out of their way to cover so-called California Representative Adam Schifferbrains, that's your host take, as he led the fight against Trump. They interviewed the scumbag at least 25 times about Trump and Russia, 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 whereupon Schiff would allude to alleged evidence about collusion, and his talking points eventually, quote, became a drumbeat of NPR news reports. You've heard the term, folks. One hand washes the other. The journalist cites NPR's former managing editor for news, sick Terrence Samuels, who explained why NPR didn't bother to cover the Hunter Biden laptop story because, quote, we don't want to waste our time on stories that are not really stories, especially if they affect our agenda, I can't help but think. And we don't want to waste our listeners' and readers' time on stories that are just pure distractions, you know, from the propaganda we want to shove down your throats. I guess you could say, folks, hey, let's talk about Stormy Daniels or something really important instead. Maybe the Kardashians or even Taylor Swift. And did you see that photo of kindly Uncle Joe with the latest ice cream cone? Says Berliner, it's bad to blow a big story, but what's worse is to pretend it never happened, to move on with no mea culpas, no self-reflection. And he also slams NPR for ignoring the New York Post report on Hunter Biden's abandoned laptop and assorted contents way back in October 2020, just as the presidential election approached. And we know precisely why now, don't we? And here's the punchline. We now know, he wrote, that the laptop did in fact belong to Hunter Biden, and the device revealed concerns, to put it mildly, about influence peddling by the so-called president's son. Yet Berliner recalls hearing a colleague say, quote, it was good we weren't following the laptop story because it could help Trump, unquote. NPR, he notes, also refused to fully report on the origin of the COVID-19 pandemic because editors deemed that the lab leak theory was racist or, say it with me, folks, a right-wing conspiracy theory. Whereas Berliner writes, we became fervent members of Team Natural Origin, even declaring that the lab leak had been debunked by scientists. Over the course of the pandemic, he spelled it wrong, a number of investigative journalists, the real kind, made compelling, if not conclusive, cases for the lab leak, or folks, I would add, worse. But he said at NPR, we weren't about to swivel or even tiptoe away from our insistence with which we backed the Natural Origin story. He mentions a colleague who compared the lab leak theory to the Bush administration's unfounded argument that Iraq possessed weapons of mass destruction. But he said those two events weren't even remotely related. Again, politics were blotting out the curiosity and independence that ought to have been driving our work, he said, of the comparison. The journalist also showed that there is currently, quote, an unspoken consensus about the stories we should pursue and how they should be framed. The stories usually cover, quote, instances of supposed racism, transphobia, signs of climate apocalypse, Israel doing something bad, and, of course, the dire threat of Republican policies. And Berliner puts much of the blame for NPR shift to the ultra-left on that former CEO, John Lansing, because he says that man became a more visible figure after the 2020 killing of George Floyd, allegedly by a police officer. and he explained that Floyd's murder, captured on video, changed both the conversation and daily operations at NPR. And instead of exploring the question of systemic racism in America, Berliner writes that the message from the top was clear. America's infestation with systemic racism was declared loud and clear. It is a given. Our mission, if you choose to accept it, Mr. Phelps, was to change it. And change it they did, folks. They made it a whole hell of a lot worse. But they had help from the other elements of the extreme left that wanted to destroy what was once, at least supposedly, a constitutional republic. There's more here, but the bottom line is that rather than truth being the goal of the network, diversity became their North Star after a $1 million bribe or a grant from the NPR Foundation. We're almost out of time for today, but rather than simply throw it away, I do think it might be kind of funny at least to take a look at the part of the show that I recorded but ended up never using yesterday before and as the big eclipse was still unfolding. So here goes. Good morning, folks, and welcome back on this Monday, the 8th day of April, 2024. I'm your host, Mark Call, and you probably already know what that day means. This is the day of the big eclipse, the total solar eclipse that will cross the United States from the non-existent Mexican border with Texas all the way up through New England, crossing states like Oklahoma, Arkansas, Missouri, and Indiana en route. And honestly, it left me with a bit of a dilemma this morning as I decided on what I was going to do about the news, because everybody's basically waiting to see what's going to happen, and I won't know that until it's too late to meet the deadline with this recording. So by the time you hear this, you'll probably have seen more, especially if it was really bad, than I was able to find leading up to it. One thing we know for sure, though, it sure looks like a target of opportunity, and there's no shortage of bad guys, imported and already in place, no doubt at least thinking about taking advantage of it. There have already been tons of states of emergency, from local and county level to cities to entire states like Indiana. And that in itself is plenty unusual, even though eclipses are a big deal, arguably bordering on suspicious. The other thing we know for sure is that there's a lot of hype for good and for evil. If you've never seen a total solar eclipse, folks, it truly is the kind of event you will remember all of your life. And I'm not talking about a lunar eclipse or a partial solar eclipse. Those are both literally a dime a dozen. This is one place where close really doesn't count at all. But the real thing, right smack in the path of totality, is truly awe-inspiring, that is, if you get to see it. And that's a big question for the vast majority of Americans that are looking out for it today. Here's a headline from the Daily Mail that says, Eclipse Mania sweeps America as thousands take to the streets to watch the rare path of totality that'll plunge parts of the U.S., Canada, and Mexico into darkness. Literally millions of spectators have gathered, concentrated themselves across that zone of totality in the U.S. to watch a spectacle that, if they get to see it at all, might last more than 4 minutes in some places. However, the forecasts for Monday are downright ominous, suggesting cloud cover, thunderstorms, and even high clouds, which is enough to ruin the effect of totality, could limit visibility and leave literally millions of people very disappointed. As a matter of fact, a map that I saw online this morning suggested that just about the only place where people might be able to see it are parts of southern Indiana or in the very northeast extreme part of the shadow over New England. And a big part of the issue and the concern, folks, has to do not only with the crowds, but the fact that the clouds may tend to move the crowds. More than 400,000 people, for example, says the Daily Mail, have traveled to Dallas alone, and a million plus are expected in Texas overall to be in the direct line of sight of the shadow of the total solar eclipse. Texans will be the first to see it shortly after 1:20 or so local time, cloud cover permitting, then Oklahoma 15 minutes or so later, followed by Arkansas, and then Missouri 5 minutes after that. The city of Indianapolis expects over 125,000 additional people to be on hand, hoping to see that total solar eclipse. And all along the route, some of the warnings have had to do with huge additional crowds and local infrastructure, whether it's cell phones or grocery stores, not to mention hotels, parking, and camping facilities, that simply can't handle the crowds expected. But as it turns out, and this has been something I've been thinking about for several days now, if not longer, the big issue may be people on the move, because when it gets really close to the actual event and they realize, hey, there's a cloud in the way, what's the natural inclination? And a whole lot of folks are going to be doing it. Hop in the car and drive somewhere out of the way, but still along the path of totality. You and who knows how many other thousands of people with the same idea. Which brings me to another story. It would have been timely even a couple of days ago. NASA and others are warning about things you just plain shouldn't do during this rare astronomical event. One of them, folks, is obvious. Never look at the sun directly with your naked eye, except during the rare time of totality alone, when you can see the corona, and if you're lucky, Bailey's beads and things like that. And you certainly don't want to use binoculars for the obvious reason. And as it turns out, don't trust a lot of the cheap online NASA-approved or otherwise eclipse glasses. In part because NASA doesn't approve any of them anyway, and if they say that, they're lying. But sadly, all of that will be water under the bridge or spilt milk by the time you hear this. So I'll just close Tuesday by saying, hey, thanks for being with us, and may Yahuwah bless you and yours.